batteries have gone, but my batteries have gone. Well, I haven't changed them for about 5 years, and so it's my own fault. Okay, there's some of the planets, so we'll move on. Okay, move on. Okay, push the button. There we go. Jason's helped me out here. Okay, there's some of the planets. We'll move on. Okay, here's some more planets. Here's the Earth. Okay, here's Jupiter. Okay, we look pretty small there. Okay, next one. Okay, here's the Sun. And here is the Earth. Okay, we're shrinking. Okay, so let's move on. Okay, here is the Sun. Okay, you can't even see the Earth now. It's one pixel on this diagram. Okay, here's the Sun, and here's Arcturus. Okay, so we're just moving out in size. Next one. Okay, now here's Arcturus right here. Okay. And here's Antares, all stars. And let's move out one more. Okay, now this is a shot from the Hubble space. What's the word? Telescope, that's right. Yeah, the Hubble telescope. And what we're looking into deep space here, and what you're seeing is every one of these, that's not a star, that's a galaxy that contains billions of stars that we've been looking at, okay? They're all galaxies. We're into deep space. Now, let's go into a very dark portion, okay? So we'll go right up here to a very dark portion, and you see it's still filled. We go just into deeper space and say, these are not stars. These are galaxies with billions of stars in. And this, as I said last week, you know, why all this? Why all this? Because you can't have life on planet Earth without a universe of this dimension that enables the physical laws to operate that make life possible on Earth. Gravitational forces, etc., etc. Those of you who are into physics would know that better than I. And so when you go right out there into deep space, you kind of wonder what it's for. It's for us, okay? Because you couldn't have life on Earth unless we had a universe of this size. Now, so God embraced all that, okay, with the arm, okay? In the beginning, the Spirit was moving, and God said, it's in His embrace, so that He can come and embrace you and bring you into His heart and into His family. So it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. Let's move on, and can give you that and that. Okay. I can't quite resist this because this again is a love story, and the whole Bible is a love story, and the whole of the cosmos is a love story. And I don't know who sent this came from. Randy, I don't know if it is Randy's, but you've got to keep these kind of things coming, okay? Because you know they kind of keep me, keep my spirits up, okay? So there was a man and a woman who had been married for more than 60 years. Now, I should say, does everybody know what a doily is? Okay, because I don't think we have doilies in England. I mean, aren't they those little round things that you crochet and you put flowers on, that kind of thing? Okay, that just clears it up. Okay, they've been married for 60 years, and they were very, very close, talked about everything, had no secrets, except the wife had a shoebox, in the closet, and she said to her husband, you must never open that shoebox. Well, he forgot about the shoebox over all these years, but his wonderful wife of 60 years got sick, and the doctors said that she would not recover. And so he was sorting out her affairs, and he found the shoebox. And so he brought it to his wife, and he said, can you now tell me about the shoebox? And he opened it, and he found in it two doilies, and $25,000. Two doilies, $25,000. And so he asked her about this, and she said, when we were married, my grandmother told me the secret of a happy marriage was never to argue, never to get in a fight. She told me if I ever got angry with you, I should just keep quiet and crochet a doily. Okay? Keep quiet, crochet a doily. Now, the little old man was so moved, he had to fight back tears. Only two precious doilies were in the box. She had only been angry with him twice in all those 60 years of living together. He almost burst with happiness. Honey, he said, that explains the doilies, but what about all this money? This $25,000, where did it come from? Oh, she said, that's the money I made from selling the doilies. So, that's a nice love story. Okay, it's the Bible. I wonder if God crochets a lot of doilies, okay, when he is dealing with me. Right, Galatians chapter 4 and verse 21, which is on that sheet for you. If you're new to the class, the reason we're using that sheet is so that we can all use the same translation, because it will slow us down with Paul if we're all using different translations, because I have to explain to you. And so you can track on the green sheet, and then you can look at your own Bible afterwards. It's not that different. But we started this last week, and you remember I stopped because I said I would leave you suspended in mid-air. So we're just going to back up and do this quickly. And now you remember, this letter of Galatians was sent to a little group of churches in Turkey, okay? And when we read this, you're going to say, oh my goodness, you know, this is so complex. Well, you know more about Scripture than they knew. And Paul wrote it expecting us to try and understand it. Okay, so we're going to try and do that. And we'll find at the end something enormously important about today. It's going to sound very, very obscure. I'll try and make it plain, go fairly quickly, so you don't lose me. Okay, so I need to back up, and this is the first 5 minutes will be what we did last week, okay? But don't lose me, okay? Because sometimes in these passages, we just think, I can't follow that. You can, and you need to. So verse 21, Paul says, tell me, you who want to be under the law, are you aware of what the law says? For it's written that Abraham had two sons, one by the slave woman, Hagar, and the other by the free woman, Sarah. His son by the slave woman was born according to the flesh. It was a natural birth, that's what that means. And that word flesh is going to become very important in Galatians now. Born according to the flesh. Ishmael, it was a natural birth. But his son by the free woman, Sarah, was born as the result of a promise. Or in verse 9, was born according to the Spirit. Isaac had a supernatural birth. Now, these people who have come into Galatia after Paul has left is saying, now, you're not really in the covenant family yet. You need to really to be able to say that Abraham is your father, you've got to be circumcised. And so what Paul is doing here, as I said last week, he's saying, who are the true sons of Abraham? Because a biological claim is not enough. You remember Luke 3:8, what it said? That God was able to raise up from stones children to Abraham. And when the Jews in John 8 said, Abraham is our father, what did Jesus say to them? He says, you are of your father the devil. And so being a son of Abraham, okay, is not simply a biological event, okay, because Abraham was a man of faith. Now, these agitators or Judaizers were saying that to be in the covenant family, okay, one had to keep the law. Now, this is what Paul says. He argues that Hagar, okay, the mother of Ishmael, okay, the son born after the flesh, represents Abraham's descendants who are only born after the flesh. Ishmael, okay, he is a son of Abraham. He is a son of Abraham, but he is not born supernaturally. He's born after the flesh. And remember, Ishmael was circumcised. And they're saying, you've got to be circumcised to really be in God's family. He's saying, wait a minute, Abraham had a son who was circumcised, but it was after the flesh. So cutting off a bit of flesh doesn't do anything. That which is born of the flesh, Jesus said, is flesh. That's right. Now, then he goes on to say that Sarah, the mother of Isaac, the son born after the Spirit, supernaturally, this is the point, not cutting off flesh. It's being born by the Spirit. Is the mother of Abraham's descendants, okay? A supernatural birth makes you a son, not circumcision. Okay, let's read on, verse 24. We didn't get to this. Verse 24, these things may be taken figuratively, for the women represent two covenants. The women aren't two covenants, they represent two covenants. One covenant is from Mount Sinai and bears children who are to be slaves, not because the law, which was holy, just, and good, made slaves. They were freed from slavery when they got the law. But how now these Judaizers, these agitators, are using the law is to put people into slavery. This is Hagar, okay? This is Hagar. One covenant, verse 24, is from Mount Sinai, and because it's distorted, it bears children who are to be slaves. This is Hagar. And you remember, Hagar was an Egyptian. She had never had a Passover. She'd never had an Exodus. And so when she comes, okay, to the mountain, she is a slave. And unbelief simply bears children to slavery. Verse 25. Now Hagar stands for Mount Sinai in Arabia, and corresponds to the present city of Jerusalem. We'll explain that in a moment. That kind of addles your brain a little bit, doesn't it? But don't worry, it's quite clear. We'll get to it. Because she is in slavery with her children. But the Jerusalem that is above is free. She's represented by Sarah. And she is our mother, because Sarah is the mother of all who believe, as Abraham is the father of all who believe, not of those who chop off bits of the flesh in circumcision. Okay, so moving on, is the present Jerusalem the real Jerusalem? Okay? Jerusalem, the capital city, founded on the law given at Sinai, because, of course, a capital is simply the center, like you go to Washington, D.C., and at the capital, you find the Constitution. That's where it is. And so what Paul is saying is the constitution of the nation was given at Mount Sinai, the law. And now it has birthed the capital, Jerusalem. They're linked. They're linked by the law. Okay. Now remember, Israel, okay, had a Passover. They had a Passover. They had an Exodus. They were freed from slavery by grace. And they come to the mountain and they get the law, which is a gift of grace. Remember that about the law. It is a gift of grace. But now it's being abused. And in Paul's day, there are people who are using the law to work their passage. And we find that even today, don't we? You go to somebody at work and you're sharing the gospel with them. And what do they say? They say, well, I'm a good person. It's the same thing. You work your passage. If you go into Islam, what are they doing? They're working their passage. I remember years and years ago, I was in Iran. And I was totally fascinated because we were driving down main streets and they had trees planted down the streets. And from the trees were hanging bottles about this big. And they were full of a kind of a orange liquid. And these were everywhere. And so finally I said to somebody, what's in those bottles? Why are they hanging from the trees? And they say, oh, in Islam, you have to give alms. You have to give alms. And what's in the bottle is petrol. Sorry. Gasoline. So when somebody runs out of gasoline, they can go to the tree, take down a bottle, fill up their tank, okay, and they've done their almsgiving by tying the bottles to the tree. Because Islam is all about working your passage. It's the scales of how much good have I done to outweigh the evil I've done. And that is in the human heart. And that is what Paul is pounding against, because he said you began by grace, you were delivered by grace, but now they're using the law, okay, keep the law, work my passage into favor with God. And that is what he is just dynamiting here. Now, allegorically speaking, the present Jerusalem has not been mothered by Sarah. Okay, now this is unbelieving Jerusalem in Paul's day. Had not been mothered by Sarah, but by Hagar. Because unbelieving Israel is a product of the flesh. Okay, it's not cutting off a bit of your foreskin that makes you a son of Abraham. It's whether you're a man of faith like Abraham was. And so he is really demolishing things. And a city of unbelief cannot possibly claim Sarah as their mother. I'll say that again. A city of unbelief can't claim Sarah as their mother because Isaac was born supernaturally. And that's why Jesus said to Nicodemus, he said, what's the word? He says, you are a teacher in Israel. Actually, the word is, you are the teacher in Israel. And you don't know these things because Nicodemus was a leading rabbinic scholar. And you don't know these things, that that which is born of the flesh is flesh. Okay? And so, just this little mention, and actually we did finish here, so sorry for you who came last week. This is a longer review than I thought. He mentions Jerusalem that is above. And I mentioned that it's very, very clear. Paul says that when you come to faith, when you come to faith, whether you are a Jew working your passage or whether you're a Gentile working your passage, hanging bottles of gasoline on trees or whatever it might be for you, okay? If you're working your passage, Paul says, okay, that's not it. But when you come to faith, you come to Mount Zion, the heavenly Jerusalem, the city of the living God. I mentioned that last week. I mentioned the difference between the God who exists and the living God. Okay, and you remember I used the illustration of I'm alive because I move, I speak, I act. Many people, most people in the world believe God exists, okay? But you see, when I die, I will still exist, but I won't be here speaking, moving, acting. And we've come to the city of the living God, a God who moves, speaks, acts, does miracles, healings, signs and wonders. That's what you've come to, the city of the living God. And what I didn't mention last week is that lovely phrase, and to thousands upon thousands of angels in joyful assembly. Now, do you know why the angels are in joyful assembly? They have to be, okay? Because there are on planet Earth today. Now, the statistics are not perfect, but this is about right. There are about, and this is mainly in the developing nations, about every 1 second somebody comes to faith in Jesus. About 84,000 a day come to faith in Jesus. There's never been a day like it. There are more Christians alive on planet Earth today than all the other 20 centuries added together. We live in an extraordinary age. Now, Jesus said there was joy in heaven when? When one sinner repents. Well, if we've got one sinner repenting every second, that's 84,000 every day, they've got to be, okay, in joyful assembly because they're so happy about the sinners who are repenting. So some of that joy should get into our hearts. And we'll come on to that when he speaks about the joy of the Spirit. Okay, let's move to verse 28. I don't want to lose our way here. I want you to stay with the argument. Notice I'm missing verse 27, which is a quote from Isaiah 54. I'm only missing it because that just takes you into the argument in greater depth, okay? And we want to get through without losing our train of thought. Verse 28. Now you brothers and sisters, Paul is including the Galatian Gentiles, Now you brothers, he's talking to the whole church, Jews and Gentiles, you brothers, like Isaac, are children of promise because you've been born supernaturally as Isaac was. Verse 29, at that time the son born in the ordinary way, Ishmael, persecuted, he's going back to Genesis, the son born by the power of the Spirit, Isaac. You remember, there were about 13 years difference between the ages of Ishmael and Isaac, okay? And Ishmael, and he mentions it here, okay, the son born in the ordinary way, Ishmael, persecuted, taunted, the son born in the power of the Spirit. It's the same now. You're being persecuted, okay, by these Judaizers, these agitators, who are acting as Ishmael, persecuting those who are born after the Spirit. Verse 30, but what does the scripture say? Cast out the slave woman and her son. Now this sounds rather harsh, okay? And you remember Abraham, he was grieved when the Lord said that you have to send Ishmael away. And Hagar kind of did a runner out into the desert, and you remember the angel of the Lord found her. But Abraham provide, as you had to, provide very, very adequately for Hagar. I mean, the angel of the Lord found her. It doesn't say it in Scripture, but probably reconnected her so that Abraham could set her up in a proper household. And he said, Ishmael will become a great nation. And certainly not all, but they are the Arabs, are the descendants of Ishmael. Probably it's a little more complicated than that. But that becomes interesting now, and that will be where we'll get to in just a moment. So don't lose me, okay? Why don't you all stand up, okay? Stand up for 5 seconds, then sit down again, because I don't want you to lose me before we get to the punchline here. Okay, now you can sit down again, okay? Some people hugging each other, some people stretching, some people, look at those all going for coffee back there. Give them half a chance and they've left me. Now I'm teasing. You are perfectly, perfectly able to do that. Okay, I'll come to you, Eugene, in a minute when we get to the punchline here. So what does Scripture say? Stay with me. Cast out the slave woman and her son, for the slave woman's son will never share the inheritance of the free woman's son. So what Paul is saying is get rid of the agitators. Now, okay, this finishes it now. The agitators claim to be Abraham's children, but spiritually, which of his children do they really descend from? And so here Paul works it out. Hagar, Sarah. Slavery, Hagar is what was called a slave wife. Sarah, freedom. Okay? Hagar, Ishmael, born in the natural way. Sarah, Isaac, born supernaturally. And that's why Paul will speak about the fruit of the Spirit. Because when you're born of the Spirit, you should have lots of joy. Okay, Ishmael born after the flesh. Isaac born after the Spirit. Okay, now, who are Abraham's children? Here or here? This is what Paul is saying. Okay, now, Hagar, Mount Sinai, the abuse of the law. Sarah, Mount Zion. You have come to Mount Zion, the heavenly Jerusalem. The heavenly Jerusalem. the city of the living God. And then, finally, the Jerusalem below, bondage in Paul's day. The Jerusalem above, okay, freedom. So Paul says the agitators are behaving, okay, these people who are claiming to be Abraham's children, okay, they are simply the offspring of Hagar. They're in unbelief, offspring of the slave woman. And he says, you, brothers who have believed in the Messiah, are the true offspring of Sarah. Now, I hinted at this last week because this brings us to a very interesting point. And you remember I said, okay, why does God allow, okay, Muslim mosques to exist on the Temple Mounts? The very place where the Shekinah glory of God dwelt now today, and we'll put this up again. Okay, now I need to switch off the brightness, I think. Let's see. Is it this one? How are we doing? We're doing good? Okay, now here, okay, is the Temple Mounts. Here. Okay, the Temple Mounts. And on it, okay, where the presence of God, okay, the Shekinah glory dwelt, there are two Arab temples or mosques. Why does God allow that? Isn't that strange to you? Isn't that strange to you? It's not strange at all. It's not strange at all. Because unbelieving Jerusalem is Ishmael. It's Ishmael. That's what Paul is saying. So Ishmael has got his temples on the Temple Mount. Why? Because they're in unbelief. And it's a visual statement of unbelief. That's why Ishmael is there. Because Jerusalem is now in unbelief. They're the sons of Hagar. They're in slavery. They're not free. But there's a window of hope. There's a window of hope. And this right here is what? The Wailing Wall, okay? The only bit of the Temple Mounts, okay, that the Jews have access to, okay? And I explained last week, but I need to say it again, that when Solomon built the temple, okay, on the mount, he had to build up walls, okay, so that he could establish the Temple Mount. Now, these were destroyed. All the walls were destroyed, okay, by the Babylonians, except a little bit. Now, they were rebuilt by Herod, okay, but this is the original little bits, okay? And it's almost like it's a visual doorway of hope, because Paul says in Romans 11 that all Israel will be saved. That's right. We believe that they will come back to being the true children of Abraham, children of the covenant, children who rejoice again, not in legalism, but in having an Exodus, having a Passover, belonging to the living God, being in freedom, the true sons of Abraham. So it's no mystery that Ishmael should have his buildings on the Temple Mount, because that's exactly what Paul is saying, okay? Jerusalem below is in slavery because they're in unbelief. Now, we need Eugene to say a little something here, because this is so important. So if we can get a microphone up here, and you can give us a little little broadening out of this amazing passage. Because believe me, folks, it has bewildered me how God could allow the Arabs to have two mosques on the Temple Mount. But if you understand this passage at the end of Galatians 4, it makes total sense. It's a visual reminder, okay, of unbelief. But there's that little doorway of hope, what is called now the Wailing Wall, where they're praying for the redemption. They're praying that they would come back as a people. Eugene.
When you showed this picture of a broken wall, which represents the true temple, versus the Arab product, which are those two masks, and you suggest that God is saying, my temple has been prostituted, so to speak.
It's Ishmael.
Yes, and Ishmael, which represents unbelief. Also, Hagar, which represents the false wife of Abraham.
She was an Egyptian.
Exactly.
She was an Egyptian. She had no Exodus, no Passover.
Exactly. Egypt represents the world.
Exactly.
The Arabs claim descendancy of two people, of Ishmael and of Esau, who was the brother of Jacob.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Now, Jacob was a worldly man, but he called upon God.
Yes.
And Esau was a man of the flesh. Give me that red
that's
soup.
Right,
he was
off, right.
And he married two heathenistic wives, which grieved his parents.
That's right.
When I see now, I'm wondering, and maybe I'm stretching the point, but Paul here says something very interesting. How many of you have watched the video that proves that Mount Sinai is in Arabia? It's not in the Sinai Peninsula. They found the mountain.
Yes.
Paul could have just said in verse 23, where is that? I'm sorry, 25. Hagar symbolizes Mount Sinai. The Jews at Paul's time knew it was in Arabia, but he said in Arabia. He says it here in this verse. Mount Sinai is in Arabia, which is the land of Midian. It's east of the Gulf of Aqaba. Yes. They crossed the Gulf of Aqaba, according to the video.
Yes.
I'm wondering if he's insinuating something. Now, if I was an Arab sitting in this room, I'd say, well, what hope do I have? You know, I'm symbolized by Ishmael, by Esau, man of the flesh.
Yes.
But Paul is not saying that. He's talking here about Jews who are spiritually sons of Ishmael.
That's right.
And when the story of the book of Hosea is that he married a wife who was not a true wife. She was like Hagar. She prostituted herself.
That's
so
right.
When I see the picture here of the temple of God, and God says, I'm allowing this because Israel is in unbelief.
That's right.
And they have a broken wall over there, which symbolizes the true Mount Sinai.
That's right.
I'm making those connections. I don't know if you can see what I'm getting in my heart.
Yes, that's right.
And so I think, you know, the rabbi said that there is interpretation beyond, you know, four levels of interpretation. I'm wondering if Paul is insinuating by saying Mount Sinai, you know where it is. It's in Arabia.
Yes.
You see, and the Jews at Mount Sinai, they prostituted the law. They broke the law.
That's what he says.
That's what he says here.
Yeah.
So it's a very strong message.
Now, you may have got Paul is diving into rabbinic exegesis, okay? And you might at this point be thinking, I need another cup of coffee, okay? I'm lost, okay? But hey, this brings you right up, okay? Right up to what you probably will even hear in the news today. Right up. Why are these things happening? Because of unbelief. And so that's a little passage. I was tempted to skip it. But it's really important, really important. And you can go back over the notes or get the tape. And it's hugely, hugely important. Okay, now we're going to move on. And we get into some kind of easier territory now. And we are going to move into chapter 5. Into chapter 5. And I'm going to... just for your encouragement, we've done the most difficult sections of Galatians, And now we're into chapter 5 and 6, which is kind of plain sailing. So stay with me now. I'm only going to read again selected verses, which will give you the spearhead, the arrowhead of where we're going. So chapter 5, and I'll read from verse 2. Verse 2. Mark my words. I, Paul, tell you that if you let yourself be circumcised, Christ will be of no value to you whatsoever. Because as I've said before, it's either a gift or you work for it. It can't be both. They're incompatible. Steve's still waiting for his BMW, okay? You remember the illustration. If I say Steve has a BMW, it's a gift. Okay, but you eventually have to give me $25,000 for it. Well, it's either a gift or he works for it. It can't be both. And that's what Paul is saying here. Verse 3, again, I declare to every man who lets himself be circumcised that he's obligated to keep the whole law, the food laws, okay, the feasts, the Sabbath, everything. Okay? If you want to embrace the old covenant, you've got to embrace it all, Paul says. You who are trying to be justified by law have been alienated, severed from Christ. You've fallen away from grace. But by faith we await through the Spirit the righteousness for which we hope. Let me make a few comments, and you can get these notes. By the way, if you're new, the notes that you don't have in your hand, you can get at the resource table next week. So don't worry about scribbling it all down. Okay, let's just take this up quickly. You who are trying to be justified by law have been alienated from Christ. You've fallen away from grace. Seeking righteousness by the law rather than by faith, alienates us, severs us from Christ. It means we're now seeking acceptance by God through different means. Now, it's not saying they're no longer saved, but they'd lost the joy of grace and are now under Ishmael. They're now under the yoke. Okay. Let's see. I was going to say something about eternal security here, because I've said that it's not that they were no longer saved. This phrase that you're alienated from Christ, it means that really they've lost the grace and joy, and they're living under the yoke, even though in the grace of God they may be still in his family. I was going to say something about eternal security, but I want you to follow the argument. Let's move on to verse 5, which I said, but by faith we eagerly await through the Spirit the righteousness for which we hope. Now, here is why I'm giving you one translation that you can read from. Because if we get into other translations, we're all over the place. Now, when you are, the word justification is the word righteous. They're exactly the same word, exactly the same Greek word. And so when you get out of the Hagar thing, into the Sarah thing, into the life of faith, okay, you are made righteous. That's justification. You're right before God, okay? Your sins are blotted out. He's put them behind your back, and you're in his family. Now, so this translation is an example, okay? By faith, we eagerly await through the Spirit the righteousness for which we hope. Well, haven't you got righteousness already? You see, it's a bad translation. And so what I will replace it with, and this is an example of working with Paul, Okay, the NIV doesn't make much sense here. A better translation, for we, through the Spirit, by faith, are waiting for the hope of the righteous. The hope of righteousness. The hope of the righteous. What is it? We're not waiting for righteousness as here. We're waiting, okay, we're waiting for the hope of righteousness, and our hope is in the coming of the Lord and the new creation, okay, which has already been inaugurated. If any man is in Christ, he is a new creation, okay, it's already been inaugurated, okay. I am a little piece of creation, just like this piece of wood is a piece of the creation. But this piece of the creation, okay, is already being, okay, being made new. I am a new creation. It's been inaugurated, and when Jesus comes, it will be consummated. Okay, and that's what we're hoping for. That's the hope of the righteous. The hope of the righteous. Okay, let's move on in our reading, okay, to verse 12. Galatians 5, verse 12. As for those agitators, now Paul here, he gets a little bit crude, but that's because he is tired of all this work of the flesh. He says, as for those agitators, I wish they'd go the whole way and castrate themselves. You see, they're already circumcised. But Paul says, why don't they just love the flesh? Why don't they just castrate themselves? Okay, it is in the Bible, so I can say it. Paul is just hot. He's just, okay. Now the whole of Galatians changes here. And what Paul does is what is very typical for him. In Paul's letters, he lays down teaching, he lays down doctrine for several chapters, and then after that, he applies it to your life, okay, And you might be thinking, you know, what has Ray said this morning that applies to my life? Well, you see, you go to Romans, for instance, and Paul speaks about regeneration, justification, sanctification, glorification, and finally, after all this weight of doctrine, we stagger into chapter 12, and he says, now I beseech you, brethren, by the mercies of God, by what I've been talking about, regeneration, justification, sanctification, glory, these are the mercies of God. Now, on the basis of that, what I've been teaching you, brethren, I beseech you, present your bodies as a living sacrifice. Why should you present your body as a living sacrifice? Because of the mercies of God that it's been speaking about for 11 chapters. Same in Ephesians. He'll lay down doctrine in chapter 1, 2, and 3. And believe it or not, we'll be in Ephesians in about 2 weeks, okay? Okay, so he lays down doctrine, chapters 1, 2, and 3. But then he changes, chapters 4, 5, 6. What is in chapter 6 of Ephesians? What's in chapter 6 of Ephesians? Sorry? Yeah, that's right. That's right. It's the armor of God, isn't it? We all know about the armor of God. That is application to your life on the basis of what is being laying down in chapters 1, 2, and 3. Same in Galatians, okay? I have dumped on you, okay, a lot of doctrine. Now, it all gets applied, okay? Now, nothing difficult about the rest. Nothing difficult about the rest. Which you might regret, by the way. Okay, verse 13. You, my brothers, were called to be free, but don't use your freedom to indulge. Now notice the NIV says the sinful nature. The Greek word is the flesh again, because now we'll have something worked out, flesh and spirit, flesh and spirit, flesh and spirit. Okay? So I don't like the translation sinful nature, that's the NIV, because the word is the flesh, okay? Don't use your freedom to indulge the flesh, but rather, and I don't know if I gave you this translation, but it's beautiful, rather be love slaves of one another. We've been talking about a lot of slavery, but now be love slaves of one another. The entire law is summed up in a single word, love your neighbor. Love your neighbor as yourself. Okay, here we go. Verse 14. You can get this next week if you want. Okay, the whole law is summed up in one word, love your neighbor as yourself. Okay, you see, the trajectory of the law finds its destination in love. That's where it was going all the time. Love is law radicalized. It's law radicalized. That's why Jesus says, you've heard it said, okay? You've heard it said that you shall not commit adultery. But I say unto you, okay, whoever looks on a woman to lust after, why? Because you're to look on people to love them. You're to be love slaves. And so now, Jesus, he doesn't abolish the law. There's the trajectory that was set, okay, at Mount Sinai, the trajectory of the law. And the law was a gift of grace. Never forget that. It's holy, just, and good, Paul said. Its trajectory, where's it going? It's going to be filled full by love, okay? And so he says it's summed up in one word, all the law summed up with one word, love your neighbor as yourself. And of course, if you love your neighbor, it's an expression of what? Loving who? Loving God. That's right. Paul says, if a man says, I love God, and hates his brother, he is a liar. We would say he's inconsistent. But the Bible, okay, the Bible is he's a liar. Just like Paul says, castrate themselves, okay. He's a liar. He's not inconsistent, he's a liar, okay. And the agitators want to bring them under the works of Torah, the law. But they miss the very heart and meaning. There's nothing wrong with the law, okay? Its meaning is love, but they've missed the whole thing. They've missed the whole thing. And we can miss the whole thing as well. If you don't live in grace, if you don't live in joy, if you don't live in freedom, if there's not a dance, if you don't literally dance, there should be some dancing in your spirit. Okay, even if you're in the worst of times, there should be that buoyancy because you've been born, okay, not from Sarah to slavery, okay. And I love that phrase in Romans where Paul says, because of all this, we should reign in life. I love that phrase. We should reign in life. Life doesn't reign over us, you know. And so many Christians, well, you know, I'm oppressed. You know, I've had a bad week. Just the car broke down, and my wife's got the flu, and even in those kind of weeks, you reign in life. Life doesn't reign over you. You reign in life, even when it's hard. There should be that buoyancy of spirit, okay? Because that's our birthright. Just one little note here that's just interesting. The word neighbor includes both fellow believers and the unsaved. So he says in verse 13, you, my brothers, were called to be free. I've read that. And then he says, so love your neighbor as yourself. And the word neighbor in the New Testament, okay, is embraces Steve as my brother and my neighbor who doesn't know Jesus. Now, one little thought here is that there are millions and millions of Christians in the third world who are just like us, who live on $2 a day, okay? Believers. But they are our neighbors. They're our neighbors. Brings it close, doesn't it? They're our neighbors. See, it's still very well to talk about, you know, believers in Bangladesh or whatever. No, they're our neighbors. They're our neighbors. And they deserve our love and our care, our prayer, our giving, our compassion. It's just a little aside there. It's very important. Okay, verse 16. Notice I am moving very quickly this morning. Verse 16. This is kind of the epicenter of where Paul is going. So I say, live by the Spirit. Live by the Spirit. That's the way to live. Today, live by the Spirit. Live by the Spirit. And you won't gratify the desires of the flesh. That's the word. For the flesh desires what's contrary to the Spirit, and the Spirit what's contrary to the flesh. They're in conflict with each other. So that you do not do what you want. Okay, let me pull something out here. Okay, and this is Galatians. This is Galatians. Going to get all my notes mixed up, but never mind. Okay, this is Galatians. I don't need to, I'm going to put it all. Now, I have not picked out all the verses, but let me show you a few. Okay, 3:3. Are you so foolish? Having begun by the Spirit, are you being perfected by the flesh? 4:29. He was born according to the flesh, persecuted him who was born according to the Spirit. But I say, walk by the Spirit, and you not carry out the desires of the flesh. You see, Spirit, flesh, Spirit, flesh. This is the choice. For the flesh sets its desire against the Spirit, and the Spirit against the flesh. For these are in opposition. They're in opposition to one another. And you feel that opposition in yourself every day. Every day. On Sundays, I usually get up at 4:30 or 5. Okay? And that's not because I'm so spiritual. That's just because I haven't done all my preparation yet for this class, okay? And when the alarm goes off, my flesh, okay, says, you're in a nice little warm bed here. You know, why get out, you know? You can wing it today, okay? I felt like that. You can wing it, you know. But no, what do I have to do? I have to say, no to the flesh, and jump out of bed, okay? I won't say I'll necessarily jump out of bed singing and dancing, but I will say no to the flesh and yes to the... And you have to say that every day, every day. These two are enemies of each other. These two are enemies of each other. Now, I perhaps won't even read the rest, but... It's all flesh, spirit, flesh, spirit, flesh, spirit. And that But the question comes, okay, what is the flesh? What is the flesh? Okay, it's not this. It's not this, okay? It's Luther. Luther called the flesh the person who is turned, he actually used the word curved in on himself. It's very good, isn't it? Because love is curved out towards other people. The flesh is independence from God. It's independence from God. And you know, the flesh doesn't just operate on the micro level in Steve. Steve's a lovely brother. He walks in the spirit. But he has some flesh as well, okay? Sonia, have you discovered he has a little bit of flesh? Okay, he has a lot of spirit, okay? But he has a little bit of flesh as well, okay? You know, I do too. So I'm just, okay? I do too. And it's that part of us. And what I was going to say is, yes, it's on the micro level, but it's also on the macro level. Lucifer, when he rebelled, okay, that was the flesh. Now, he was a disembodied spirit, but that was the flesh, okay? And when we get evil structures, principalities and powers, that's the flesh, independence from God, okay? I'll be God. That's the flesh. You see, it's a principle that operates not only in Dan, okay, a lot of the spirit. Have you discovered any of the flesh in him?
Yeah.
How long have you?
40 years.
40 years you've been married, okay. Discovered a little bit of the flesh in him, okay. It's leaking out all over the place this morning. I better get into some positive territory before we finish here. Okay, so what do I want to say here? Ah, yes, yes, we can finish on a high. Verse 22. Here we go. But the fruit of the Spirit. Okay. The fruit of the Spirit. If you say no to the flesh, you give space for the Spirit. And the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. And against such things there is no law. Those who belong to Christ Jesus have crucified the sinful nature with its passions and desires. Now, I'll just finish up with this. I don't really have time, but I'm going to try anyways. Okay, notice it's singular. The fruit, not the fruits. You see, fruit is what we call a singular that carries a plural idea, literally a collective singular, as the word seed is, okay, a collective singular. Why? You see, the fruit of the Spirit is in the context of the church, not the individual. We always read this as, but he's speaking to the church. They are all in contention. They are all blown about by the agitators. And Paul says that's because of the flesh. You see, not in the individual, in the church, but the fruit of the Spirit. Okay, singular. Okay, the fruit of the Spirit in your midst. Okay, if the Galatians live in the Spirit, this will describe their life together. I'm running out of time. I don't want to rush this. This is too great. This is too wonderful. So we've got a minute left. Does anybody have a question? Okay. Perhaps 2 minutes left. Okay, Terry back there. You can either lift up your voice like a trumpet or have a microphone. Here we go.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
I noticed right in the middle of the deeds of the flesh, it has witchcraft or sorcery.
Yes.
Isn't it interesting that we always give the devil more credit than it deserves?
Yes, yes, that's right, that's right. And also, if you just back up, and we'll finish with this. Verse 19, I didn't read it. The acts of the flesh, sexual immorality, impurity, debauchery, idolatry, witchcraft, hatred. Okay, if there's hatred in our hearts, it's all ranked together here. Hatred alongside sexual immorality, discord alongside idolatry, jealousy, okay, alongside sexual impurity, fits of rage in the same category, selfish ambition, you know, this comes right home, okay? You don't need a complex bit of rabbinic exegesis to understand this, okay? It simply says that things like envy is alongside drunkenness, okay? And selfish ambition is there as well. And all these things, you see, belong to the old creation, okay? That's the old creation. But if any man is in Christ, he's a new creation. And now we live in the new creation. That's living in the Spirit. Okay? It's been inaugurated, not yet consummated. But that's where you can live today. Isn't that wonderful? We can live there. Okay? Whatever the stock market is doing, we can live there. Okay? You've lost your job, but you can live in a realm of love and joy and peace. That's your inheritance. Don't go back to Hagar. Don't go back to Ishmael. Stand in your inheritance. Don't let the enemy rob it away today. Okay? Because you've been born. You've been born supernaturally. Okay? You're truly in God's worldwide family that's characterized by love, joy, peace, and all those wonderful things. So here ends the lesson. Okay, I'll shut up and you can move on. So the Lord bless you and live in the Spirit today and don't give way to the flesh.